dress.
Cool. Now I understand why it's written on the side of your vehicle.
In transcending the Cartesian division, modern physics has not only invalidated the classical ideal of an objective description of nature, but also challenged the myth of a value-free science. The patterns scientists observe in nature are intimately connected with the patterns of their minds, with their concepts, thoughts, and values. Thus, the scientific results they obtained and the technological applications they investigate will be conditioned by their frame of mind. Although much of their detailed research will not depend explicitly on their value system, the larger paradigm within which this research is pursued will never be value-free. An excerpt from the book The Turning Point by Fritjof Capra. For too long, the media and press have claimed themselves to be a neutral party. Those who only report the plain facts and take no sides in the current state of affairs, believing themselves to be detached observers who contain no bias and fail to land on a particular side of the argument. In the film Civil War, this idea is dissected and dismantled, showing how the media and press have been and will always be involved, biased, and lacking any semblance of neutrality. There is no use denying our partiality, as all humans are prone to taking sides and containing bias, and the media are no different. They are not some special breed of human that can somehow overcome this innate aspect of experience. Throughout the film, we see how the press are constantly playing a role in the shifting landscape of the world, partly due to their own action or non-action, and partly because they are unable to realize how they are influencing changing events solely through their presence. Far from being neutral, the media's involvement and personal viewpoints may be one of the largest factors in shaping the world's minds, beliefs, and opinions. As the tyrant president addresses the nation, video clips of riots, war, and violence are interspersed throughout the address. These are the common scenes being presented in the modern age, exampling how the nation is in shambles. These photos and videos of destruction are what influence the public on a daily basis, that which tells society what is real and what should be trusted, what we should put our faith in and what we should believe in. Many of these images have been captured by the photographer and journalist, including our main character Lee, who is seen outdoors during a protest. She is the quintessential war reporter, placing herself adjacent to the action and grabbing the shots that no one else dare to touch. Early on, we get the impression that Lee sees herself as some type of closed-off system, one which is immune from her surroundings and the constant terror she captures, hardened to the world and her own feelings about what she has seen. She has striven to be the detached observer, one who maintains the unbiased view which many media claim to uphold. During the protest, Lee manages to pull a young reporter named Jesse out of harm's way, just before a suicide bomber runs into the crowd. It's as if a reflex within herself cannot let this person be hurt, a deeply ingrained instinct to be involved in help. There is an intrinsic inability to be isolated from the events they are documenting. Lee soon takes photos of the aftermath with blackened eyes and a worn-over expression. It is the look of someone who has been devastated by repeated traumatic experiences, a testament to her full immersion in constantly occurring action. Not long after, she sits in a tub to decompress, reflecting on all she has seen over the years. The images of brutality and horror repeat in her mind as she finally has time to herself. Despite Lee's hard exterior persona and the lens which is placed between herself and the war, there is no avoiding the effect of seeing all this violence. But the impact is not linear, in that the accumulation of damage is adding up over time in a non-direct way, a buildup that has long been contributing to her worldview, her personal opinions and ingrained beliefs. The gravity of Lee's photos have influenced the novice Jessie to become a journalist herself, arriving at this place in her life after years of studying shots from the veteran reporter. It's an example of the indirect influence these photos might have, of the interconnectedness of things, which contrasts with Lee's views of how she thinks the world operates. At one point, she mentions, "I thought I was sending a warning signal. Don't do this. And here we are." Lee sees the world as a type of machine, in which cause leads to direct effect, and simplistic deductive reasonings are the best explanations. She thinks that images of horror and violence should wake people up and make them get off their couch, a sort of knee-jerk reaction. But in fact, the results are much more non-linear, and that these scenes have become glorified over time, leading to increased polarity and division among the viewing public. They have led to a decreased interest in resolving conflict, whilst intensifying anger against those who are deemed responsible for the country's schism. The photos do not have an effect in the reductionistic way in which A leads to B. Instead, they affect in a way which cannot be determined in advance and can only be detected by understanding elusive patterns. The reporters head out on the road, and when they stop for gas, Jesse comes across a couple of hanging bodies inside of a car wash. Half-dead men plead for their lives, being left to rot and suffer after an attempted looting. Jesse is asked to make a decision regarding their fate. Should they be killed and relieved of their suffering, or left to hang some more? Before the choice can be made, Lee requests that the militant youth take a photo with the bodies, and they proceed to leave without asking any questions. Lee later claims that,
"Once you start asking yourself those questions, you can't stop. So we don't ask. We record so other people ask. Want to be a journalist? That's the job."
Hey, Lee.
And it seems to fall in line with her generally impartial attitude. Instead of becoming involved, of doing something to make a change, she chooses to take the photo as the unattached observer she claims to be. She believes that journalists do not become involved. They stick to themselves and just do their job. But her non-action is also a type of action, further solidifying a particular stance on how to approach those in dire need. The possibility to take a stand was present, but they instead make a statement about who they are and where their allegiance lies. One which lies with themselves and their own preservation. A far cry from an absolutely neutral individual.
Are you guys aware there's like a pretty huge civil war going on all across America?
Oh, sure, but we just try to stay out.
The travel party enter a combat zone between opposing forces, and snapped black and white photos are taken by the photographers. Soldiers are placed in near-death situations while the journalists watch it all unfold, blood pouring from a gunner as he dies. The opposition is soon defeated, and it has become apparent that the journalists are aligned with the rebel army, the non-uniformed men of the western states. Lee and her friends continue to stand by idly, all the while Joel telling jokes with one of the rebels. It makes us wonder whether these journalists are just obtaining the facts of the story. Are they really just observing the events of the day? How is watching executions and laughing about the day's events part of their neutral position? The events transpire as they turn the blind eye, as soldiers are turned to hamburger meat. They have all but confirmed their side in the war, while simultaneously committing to the idea of being an unbiased party. Following the carnage, Lee sits down to speak with Jesse and mentions that her parents are sitting on a farm somewhere, pretending that all of this is not going on. Reflecting similar statements made earlier on by Jesse, each has become disappointed by the non-action of others, the failures to do something and be a part of it all. Each believes their parents are somewhat responsible for the chaos in the country, and that the failure to act is what has prevented real change from happening. This conversation is exposing their shadow side, as the two of them are not immune from the need to be an onlooker, often hiding behind their lenses, entering into a friendly territory, and posing as mild-mannered reporters. They claim themselves to be innocents in this catastrophe, though we know they are on a definite side. They only become involved when it is convenient for them to do so, meanwhile denouncing those who remain on the sidelines. The conversation continues, and Jesse looks for a keeper photo, one that stops the show and gets everyone to look. She finally finds the one, considered as great by Lee, a photo that is the most impactful, close to the action, with intimate details, and speaks the loudest. It seems to haunt Jessie's mind, shaking her to the core, getting under her skin. The Keeper photo is the one with most influence and which pulls the viewer in a particular direction. It is that which shifts one from what they have been, being transformed by the experience of the captured moment. It is also the one that furthers the themes of terror, fear, and anguish being pushed by the media. Meanwhile, the two neglect to take photos of children running around the stadium corridors with gigantic graffiti pieces in the background, as images of fun, play, and solidarity are not in their forte. They look past places that display the brighter side of human life, continuing to focus almost exclusively on the destruction they perpetuate.
Someone's trying to kill us. We are trying to kill them.
You don't know what side they're fighting for.
Throughout the film, we are asking ourselves again and again, is it ever possible to be completely neutral? And perhaps a trip to the Department of Physics may help us in this quest with an approach to the principles of Werner Heisenberg and his observer effect. The theory holds that consciousness itself can move the universe. We need not an action or a thought or a feeling, not even the breath of a nostril. All we need is consciousness itself to alter the path of phenomena. The thing of consciousness, which is hardly known in what it is itself, can determine what waves and particles are and how they react just through their observation. It provides a context to the fallacy of neutrality argument, in that everything has an effect, everything alters something in one way or another, and is never free of this burden. Nothing is ever fixed and not in process. All things are constantly in motion. No thing can ever be neutral to the world, isolated and separate, as each passing moment is a cause for paths and directions to be started and continued, a web of connections interweaving itself through reality. Following a terrorizing encounter where they escape a human grave created by a sociopathic independent party, each member comes out seriously affected and changed by the experiences of the past few days. Several of their friends have died, and they have all come close to death themselves. But this is all hardening their viewpoints, leaning them in stronger directions, intensifying their hate for the other side, which they claim to hold no bias against. There is no way to be unaffected and unevolved by the scenes they have witnessed, by the horror they have been immersed within. They are embedded in this world, and they are playing a part in the shaping of events, by killing others and aiding in the death of their friends, creating even more polarization in the process.
What am I saying that's wrong?
I'm not saying it's wrong. She just shook up.
He doesn't understand shook up.
Whoa.
Perhaps the only way we can overcome this hoax of neutrality, this mirage of separateness and isolation, the belief that we are all like marbles hitting other marbles in a deterministic universe, is to understand that no matter what we do or don't do, that we are always having some type of effect. That despite not seeing the effects or actions right in front of our eyes, we are always changing the world in one way or another. That just being alive, just breathing air, even consciousness itself in all its ineffability, is doing something and altering something. That no act goes unnoticed in the cosmos, and that each instance and moment has a meaning and purpose within the final design. That to believe one can just sit in the middle and claim non-participation is one of the most ridiculous ideas of all. To think that we are isolated units, separate entities floating around the universe and resisting interactions with the environment, is a farce and an illusion of societal conditioning. So we must ask, what might occur if we stop pleading ignorance to our involvement in the world? How might things change if we accept our participation in every single moment of life? How might we better understand our effect on the world if we see ourselves more as interconnected and intertwined beings rather than neutral units? The group finally arrives at the White House, and Lee is a shell of her former self as she tries to finish the job she started long ago. With the death of Sammy, it has all become too real, and the weight of her life experiences have come crashing down all at once. She had been impervious to her experiences for so long, but now she is finding it impossible to look away. She is no longer able to deny her involvement, how she has affected the world, and how it has affected her, coming to a standstill in which she can barely move on her own. Meanwhile, Jessie looks as if she is on a drug-fueled craze, wide-eyed and hungry for more of what has recently energized her nervous system. She is looking for the next great photo, the next money shot, foaming at the mouth for one more hit. The two characters contrast perfectly. The veteran is finally coming to terms with her non-neutrality, with the gravity of the experiences and what they mean for herself and perhaps the nation. The way that she may have caused much more pain and suffering than she could have imagined. While the newcomer Jessie has built her immunity to recent experiences, operating on pure adrenaline and dopamine, all of which hijacks her ability to truly feel what is occurring around and within herself. It is all too real for Lee now, seeing the interconnectivity of life, while Jessie acts as if she has entered a virtual reality machine. Lee wants to hide from the truth, while Jessie runs head-on towards destruction like a junkie. They continue their hunt for the next perfect photo, and Jessie's ambition puts her in the line of fire, desiring to be the next great star. Lee foresees the potential catastrophe, and she saves the youngster from harm before being shot herself. But rather than catching Lee, rather than being humane and aiding her savior, Jessie instead grabs the shot of Lee's falling body and lets her crash to the ground unaided. And despite this tragic move, we can't help but feel that Lee is partly responsible for what takes place here. It is a type of poetic irony, or cosmic karma, as Lee herself has been putting out images of war, violence, and death for many years, perpetuating scenes of destruction to audiences, all of which have influenced Jessie towards her career, towards this current place and time. It's as if Lee's career in documenting carnage has finally caught up to her in the non-linear way we have been referencing. And the effect of it all is a young hotshot who would rather snap a photo than help a dying friend. At the same time, Lee has always professed herself as a constant observer, the neutral party who doesn't become involved and stays separate from the action. This is the attitude and message she has put out into the world, and so it shouldn't surprise us that the essence of Lee's approach has permeated the psyche of the young reporter who witnesses Lee's last seconds of life. Perhaps this is what Jessie and others who viewed Lee's photos have learned from this approach, coming to know that focusing on the money shot while remaining separate and neutral is a preferred method over helping another who is in need of aid. Jessie and Joel go on to witness the president begging for his life, and Joel demands a quote to go along with his photo. The president says, "Don't let them kill me," and it fits perfectly for Joel and his narrative. It was always his desire to humiliate the man he detests so much and influence others to feel the same way. He and the other reporters were always intent to further their bias and slant to help move the polarity even further in one particular direction, despite claims to be just the press. Each of the reporters and all media members are aligned with some personal view of what the world should look like, of how things should be, of who is right and who is wrong. It is a fact we cannot get around, an inevitable truth of human existence. And it seems that by denying their bias and leanings, as opposed to accepting and understanding them, they are all having a much more destructive effect on the viewing public than they might like to believe. By looking away from the reality of non-neutrality, they are fueling the very problems they are hoping to extinguish. In the end, we are learning that the pure observer does not exist, that one is always participating in events in some form or fashion, and that unless these ideas are recognized and accepted, the motives of the media must continue to be questioned as opposed to being implicitly trusted.